Assalamu alaikum, welcome back. And if you're just tuning in, this is Lifestyle Matters on Radio 786 100.4 FM. And on tonight's show, we are going to dive into an essential conversation on employee motivation, a driving force behind productivity, engagement, and satisfaction in the workplace. We're thrilled to have Andrew Solomon, Client Strategy Director at Achievement Awards Group, joining us to unpack the art and science of balancing intrinsic and extrinsic motivation. In an ever-evolving world where purpose and passion are just as important as recognition and rewards, businesses need to carefully design strategies that keep employees motivated for the long term. How do we nurture intrinsic motivation while ensuring practical external needs are met? How can businesses prevent reward systems from undermining natural passions? Andrew will help us navigate this delicate balance, offering insights into creating recognition and rewards programs that are effective, adaptable, and meaningful. Good evening, Mr. Andrew.
Hi.
Mr. Solomon, thank you for joining us tonight. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for inviting me.
Are you most welcome, Mr. Andrew. So let's get into it. Let's start with the basics, Mr. Solomon. So can you just briefly for us explain the difference between intrinsic and extrinsic motivation and why it's important to recognize both in the workplace?
Okay. So intrinsic and extrinsic motivation quite simply mean factors that come from internal or external, right? So motivation, you can be motivated by your salary or getting a bonus at the end of the year, some kind of incentive, and all of those things come from outside, right? So those are external factors. Intrinsic stuff comes from inside. So it's a sense of fulfillment, a sense of purpose. Perhaps you enjoy a particular task, so you get enjoyment out of it or a sense of accomplishment when you finish doing that. And those all come from within you. And generally speaking, those would be difficult to motivate because, of course, you're the one who's motivating yourself. So that's the basic basic principle behind intrinsic and extrinsic motivation.
Right. So, how do generational differences like younger employees valuing purpose and older generations prioritizing stability impact the type of motivation that works best?
Right. So the younger generations are certainly focusing a lot more on intrinsic motivators, and it's actually causing a bit of a change in the workplace as companies are looking at new ways to motivate their staff. Older generations, as you say, motivated by stability, perhaps also a lot of those extrinsic motivators. So the salary, the long-term bonus, holding on until, you know, to get a kind of a bonus at the end of something. Now, the as I said, the younger generations value purpose. You've got a sense of autonomy, or even just recognition, wanting that recognition, which is something where it helps someone in a younger generation. And it's not exclusive, by the way. These are kind of we're talking about younger and older generations, but it is a little bit of a blend. And then certainly as the world changes, you're finding that certainly there's a lot of members of older generation that would really enjoy that recognition as well, that sense of purpose. But I think it is the younger generation that's kind of teaching that, you know, that this is how the workplace can exist. And so obviously companies are having to respond accordingly. And I mean, the interesting part is that certainly as the younger generations enter the workforce, you have a lot of the management and executives would obviously be from that older generation. So there's a little bit of a challenge there. And you may find in some companies where they haven't necessarily got it right, they may perhaps as an older generation executive team, they may say, you know what, your reward and your recognition is the salary you get every month. And of course, that's not exactly a good way to do that.
So I suppose it's an ever-changing and evolving kind of landscape because obviously these new kids coming in and then people are maybe stuck in the old ways of doing things. Can you tell us that you've mentioned that relying solely on one type of motivation can limit impact. Can you share an example of a situation where the right blend of intrinsic and extrinsic motivation worked effectively?
Yes, so the and that actually is a key factor there. It's intrinsic motivation is would not be a good thing, and nor would extrinsic. So it is really about the blend of both of those that actually really makes things work well. And so if you take some of what I've said about let's take mastery, perhaps someone really is motivated by a sense of mastery. In other words, getting to a high level of achievement of a particular topic. Now, you could motivate that person with a bonus or incentive to get to that high level, or you could, if you understood this about the person, if you understood that they valued that a high sense of mastery, they could be motivated to teach others. So by completing teaching tasks and passing on information, that would truly magnify their mastery of a topic. And of course, what you would have done there is you would have, in a secondary way, you would have motivated others and you would have empowered others to reach new levels as well. So what you've essentially done is with one particular rule of recognition, you've actually ended up motivating more than one person.
Awesome. So the over-justification effect is fascinating and something many businesses may not realize. So how can companies avoid undermining intrinsic motivation when introducing new reward systems?
Yeah, over-justification, that effect is really interesting. And it's for those that don't know what that is, it's really when you take something that someone is already interested in, and you know, for example, if you take you're interested in painting as a child, and as you grow up you really just enjoy this painting and just generating this creative work, but at some point someone starts paying you for those paintings and they start motivating you to paint more and more and more, that can actually ruin your own sense of motivation that's coming from an intrinsic place, because it's essentially been replaced by that external reward. And then the worst thing happens is when someone takes away that external reward, they say, I'm no longer paying you for any painting or paintings and artwork. And what generally happens, as the science teaches us, is that people stop painting. So you've essentially taken something that someone intrinsically loved.
Sure.
And by over motivating them, and extrinsically motivating them only, it actually took that away from them. So you can actually ruin that for people. So companies should learn from that, because you need to focus on, if there are things that people really love doing, there are other ways to motivate them rather than just magnifying that with a financial reward. There are many other ways that, and this is the beauty of designing these programs. A lot of it has to do with understanding your people.
So do you have a couple of examples of that type of rewards, perhaps for new business owners? Or
So I think the really it comes down to understanding what people enjoy. So if you have people who really are enjoying, for example, they're a trainer, yeah, and they really just like the social element, they're meeting new people all the time, they're training people, and what you're going to do is you're now going to turn this into a let's say a reward system where it's the trainer is now being incentivized to have a high pass rate of their learners in it. It's the workplace environment, right? So the new recruits are coming and they're getting trained, and then their scores are this kind of motivating program that's been put in for the trainers. And then perhaps there's a financial reward that would seriously eat into that trainer's love for teaching people and helping people, because they would be, he would introduce stress into the system or into that person's mind, and they would start to become very worried when they realized that some people were asking questions that perhaps was implying that they didn't understand the course material. So that can really ruin that love of training for that person.
So I take it it's something similar to somebody, let's say, for example, who's got this hobby or passion for photography, let's say, and then they start doing it at a commercial level, they start doing weddings, and it could really like kill that passion, because now is it
Absolutely.
Something something similar.
Exactly. And I mean, even if you take examples in sport, you often find, you know, when sports players get paid lots of money, you find stories of where things could go wrong in their career path. And then someone says, listen, the key here is to bring the fun back. It's very difficult to do when you've been paid, you know, £1 million to play football.
I suppose it's also that pressure that could come with it. It's associated with getting that money and having to deliver, and
exactly, probably a
bunch of factors.
Exactly.
If you've just tuned in, welcome. We are on the Lifestyle Matters. We're having a conversation with Mr. Andrew Solomon. He's a client strategy director, and we are talking about employee motivation, the driving force behind productivity, engagement, and satisfaction in the workplace. If you've got any questions, the number to dial is 0786-101112. I'm sure Mr. Solomon would love to answer them for you. Getting into our next one now, Mr. Solomon, what are some common pitfalls that you've seen in poorly designed recognition and rewards programs?
Right, a great question. So these programs need to be taken seriously. So the design is a huge part of it. Very often companies will purchase a platform and they won't have really taken note of the design. And the design is, in actual fact, really the most important part. These platforms are really just the enabler of a well-designed program. At our company, Achievement Awards Group, we really focus on that design side. And so if you look at some of the elements of the design, launching the program is an incredibly important thing. You really get that burst of energy at the beginning of a program. You can't just go and stick a few posters up in the canteen and expect people to read these posters and then start recognizing people. And then similarly, you have to make sure there's regular communication. So in fact, a communication strategy throughout the lifetime of the program. And of course, you really want the program to run for a very long time, especially if you've lined it up with your goals of your company. You don't want people just to kind of reach their goals in the first quarter and then just kind of go to sleep on the program for the rest of the year. You want it to be a consistently performing program for the business, not unlike any other program you may have running. So these are, I mean, those are the common pitfalls. You know, there are a couple of other things as well. Perhaps companies reward only the outcomes for, you know, a common thing would be looking at what is the financial target. And then only when you reach the financial target is there a reward. But what about all that good behavior that a lot of people exhibited trying to get to that outcome? The outcome is really just at the very end. But there's a lot of very positive behavior, which is a very good thing to encourage, because at the, you know, you would have a better chance of hitting things in the long term if you make sure that people are exhibiting the right behaviors that align with the company values, that align with the company goals, that are really just headed in the right direction. But the outcome is really only one aspect of a whole year kind of effort.
And I think that's quite
I think are the common ones.
Yes, true. I recognize that myself. And so can you tell us as well, like, how do businesses strike a balance between recognizing measurable performance and celebrating behaviors like innovation, creativity, or teamwork, which are harder to quantify?
Yes. So, I mean, we refer to those as values. So those would be the values of the business, right? So let's take teamwork and collaboration and words like that. So if a company really is trying to encourage teamwork and the value of collaboration, for example, is part of the company ethos, and you really want people to live that, well, then you're going to reward people in some way, shape, or form for collaborating with each other, for asking for help,
right,
for sitting in a team to uncover a problem. One of the real problems of too sharply incentivizing people for personal achievement is you very often get that lone wolf scenario where people are really just trying to do it themselves. I don't want to share my prize with anybody. So you end up getting this very selfish behavior. I'm saying if you're only incentivized for just the achievement, if you look at those values and if you really want people to work together, that would be a great way to blend. There's nothing wrong with mixing up the incentivization of an outcome, of a of a sales target, et cetera, savings targets, et cetera, but also coupled with the value of teamwork. And I'm just giving that as an example. There are any number of values that come into that.
Right. So, Mr. Solomon, you talk about designing programs that align with both organizational goals and personal employee growth. What steps can companies take to ensure this alignment?
So it's really, you've got to work with your people. You got to understand, first of all, the company goals are something that the executive team should be able to describe.
Right.
And that's something that needs to be essentially loaded into the program. The program needs to try and set your staff on a path to get to those goals. Now, mapping out all of the steps, the behaviors, the achievements along the way are part of that as well, and mapping that out so that you're not simply, like I said before, not just rewarding that outcome. And then, of course, most companies would have their set of values. And, of course, those values are there to really depict the kind of person that would work well in that company.
Right.
And if the values don't match your own personal values, there's going to be a struggle, a challenge. And this is one of the things, by the way, you asked about the younger generations. We're finding that the younger generations are not easily working in a company that doesn't match their values. And notice how, you know, I'm saying that slightly differently, because before there were values and companies would have values. And people would go and think, can I exist in this company? And you know what? It's fine. I'll get over it. I'll be here for a couple of years, and older generations would stick it out for many years, whether it matched their values or not. Or maybe there was one or two of the values that were the same. Younger generations are going, nope, it doesn't match my values. I'm not even going to accept the job. So they're very sensitive to that kind of value matching. And that's a good thing, because it obviously is really going to make a person way more successful when they work in a company that is really aligned with their own values.
So in your experience, what role does leadership play in driving effective recognition programs, and how can managers be better equipped to motivate their teams?
Right. So, yeah, that's an incredibly important part of the design. Leadership, certainly line managers and all the way to the top. This is, this is something that that the managers need to exhibit this behavior themselves. This is not about a whole lot of managers saying staff need to behave a certain way, they need to follow the values, but we're all going to just do things our way. It doesn't work like that. The managers have to exhibit exactly the same behaviors. I talked about collaboration earlier, and then the managers would have to employ those same tactics and behaviors. Now, there's, and whether you're talking about staff or whether you talk about, parenting, there's a saying which goes, they won't listen to what you say, but they'll do what you do. And that's exactly what should be applied here. So if the managers don't behave the same way, what we found with our analysis of the data, we find pockets of people that perhaps don't recognize each other. Very often, that's because the manager is not recognizing people and they simply have followed suit. Now, that's very easy to resolve. You don't have to go and take that team and retrain them and make sure they understand how the program works. You simply have to train the manager and you get that multiplying effect. So that is, and it's a sensitive bit of training, because like I said before, managers very often are perhaps an older generation. This is not, doesn't come naturally to everybody.
Sure.
That, staff need to be recognized and every week, every day, every whatever, every time you see something, a lot of people need to be shown that this is actually the way that workforces are now.
So it's just basically also leading from the front. So
that's right.
The rest you can see. How can businesses use technology or digital tools to streamline and improve the recognition process, particularly for real-time recognition?
Yes. Very important. And again, that's ticking all the blocks for the younger generation, but also making it easier for all generations. And when at Achievement Awards Group, we have a platform which, and there are many of them. And, so the social feed of recognition is an incredibly important thing. Sure. You can send out a thank you using the technology of WhatsApp.
Right.
And you could send out a thank you to your staff member. But that is only, that's in the same way. That's the same as calling that staff member into your office and thanking them. That's a, sure, they're going to feel good about it. But the real power behind technology is it allows you to recognize people essentially in public or in front of their peers. Now that social feed, which is now very normal in our lives with Instagram and Facebook and whatnot, where you get to see what's happening in with people around you or that are connected to you, is an incredibly important thing in the workplace. And very often having that feed of recognition, which is really always positive. No one's being recognized for doing anything negative.
Yes.
So therefore you're getting positive feed of the business that you're working in. And just like tech makes social media work, so does it make recognition platforms work. And as you said, you asked about instant recognition, and that's an important part as well. There's no sense in having a recognition that comes a month after the event.
Right.
I'm sure it won't be necessarily forgotten by the person, but it's definitely not as effective. And you really want to magnify that behavior. Like I was saying, if you want to recognize people for behaving appropriately or behaving in the correct manner aligned with values, if they do it today, why in the world wouldn't I recognize them today so that I can magnify that for tomorrow?
Of course. So it's, you don't want to come after the fact. Generally, it's once they've performed greatly, you also want to recognize that and show them that, like you say, recognize people exactly. in public, reward them.
Yes.
So data-driven insights are crucial for evaluating program success. What are the key metrics companies should monitor to ensure that their programs are delivering results?
Yes. So the behavior of recognizing people, right? So there's always a person recognizing and there's someone receiving a recognition.
Right.
In some cases, and certainly on our system, you could have perhaps if I recognize you and then your manager needed to approve that recognition because maybe I put a value, a RAND value on that. So therefore that budget needed to be approved. Now then there's three people involved.
Right.
Following the data on those three people, or in most cases two people, is very important because you get to see patterns and you get to see your people. The way we look at it is the data allows you to see your people. The company can see their people in a way that you wouldn't ordinarily see. It's quite a revealing thing to see who's recognizing who. And it's not, I'm not saying it as a bad thing. It's just you start to see these people work well together. There's a really, a good team where they appreciate each other's efforts. They perform well and they've got a good cycle going. But you can also see those pockets of people who are essentially being ignored. Either they're not performing and therefore not earning a recognition,
right,
or they are performing and then somehow that's not getting noticed. And so whatever it is, data is not there to necessarily give you the answer. It's just supposed to present information to you, an insight perhaps, so that as a manager, you can take the right step. You can make a decision. You can go and investigate further. And ultimately, what are you trying to do? You're trying to change behavior. So in that case, by showing that data, you're ultimately changing the behavior of the person looking at the data and then going and fixing a problem perhaps. So it's really a very important part of recognition. It's become a powerful part of seeing your staff. And we've had cases as well where if you look at that data in a certain way and you look at the trends, you can also start seeing when people are becoming unhappy. And you could catch something before it leads to a resignation, for example. You don't want people to get to a point where they become disgruntled and they think the only way out is to resign.
So with the workforce demographics and economic conditions constantly changing, how should companies adapt their recognition and rewards programs to stay relevant?
Right. So this is a little bit different in South Africa versus other countries. Certainly, a lot of the programs that we've seen in Europe and in the States tend to be the rewards themselves are quite aspirational. Travel, and big screen TVs and all sorts of things. And, But in SA, we, it tends to be a little bit more basic than that. And it's, I mean, that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just really that's what is needed. So programs need to make sure that they don't, in certainly in South Africa, don't, have, reward sets that are, you know, overly aspirational. That needs to be a good mix. So make sure you've got the grocery partners in there, the fuel partners, et cetera. Right. The mobile phone partners, et cetera. So because what happens is people end up, taking part in these programs, already performing well, and it augments their income, rather than in, let's say, Europe, where people save up their rewards and end up going on a holiday at the end of the year, something like that. It may be very similar, you know, financial values and numbers, but it's just used in a totally different way. But I think the real key is to, make sure there's variety, and then and make sure that you know what your people want. You know, so I'm speaking quite generally here, but of course, if you were to show me a company of investment bankers, they go, no, we're like Europe. We want the holidays and the big screen TVs. You know, it'll be different depending on the company we're talking about.
So how important is ongoing feedback from employees in shaping and evolving these programs?
Yeah, another aspect that's very important. As part of our design system that we use, the last leg of that design system is essentially a feedback loop. So that essentially turns it into a cycle. So we are constantly reevaluating based on the feedback that comes through how effective the program is. If you just think about all of the things that we've just spoken about with generations, et cetera,
yes.
If you wait long enough, and if a program is running long enough, essentially your participants will change because they are people who are coming in. There's younger people coming in. There's people entering the company that perhaps came from other companies that had a recognition program or didn't have one, et cetera. So you have to constantly reevaluating who's in the system. And so product design or program design in the world today, because it's so fast moving, is all about checking in with your audience. And that check-in can be a direct thing. Like you see a lot of surveys and people asking questions all the time about how are you enjoying this experience. But of course, the thing we were just talking about a second ago, which was data.
Yes.
The data can be looked at as well. So you don't necessarily have to be asking people all the time. You can really check that feedback or see that feedback and make inferences of how people are behaving, and let that be your feedback. But of course, there's nothing beats getting actual feedback from people.
Of course. So, Andrew, looking ahead, what trends do you foresee in employee recognition and motivation strategies?
I think with more data, as the world is turning into this kind of this pile of data. It's like there's data connected to us and everything we do, touch, listen to, watch on TV, whatever it is. Everything has data associated with and associated with you. So I think that's going to lead to more personalization, and certainly in rewards programs, engagement programs, employee programs, you're going to end up having the experience becoming quite personalized. And of course, you know, the hot topic of the day is always about AI. Everyone's talking about AI. So I'm pretty sure that's going to, you know, have a role to play in there, and certainly connected to personalization and how things are interpreted, and perhaps nudges to people that maybe the system has seen a recognition or a behavior worthy of a recognition. And then, or even some timed events, like, for example, if it's your 10-year anniversary, and that's something we didn't really speak about earlier, but that's another reason to recognize people.
Right.
They've been working at the company for 5 years, 10 years, etc. Certainly the more formal ceremonies can happen, where people come into a hall or a part of the boardroom and come and get an award for being there for 5 years. But these are things that can be recognized as well on a system, a recognition system. And of course, when you've got a lot of data and you've got, as I said, with AI,
yeah,
these are things that could be recommended to you. So not unlike what we're seeing on other kinds of systems. And I think ultimately, The ultimate experience with a reward program, such as what we've been speaking about, is the reward element, of course. So designing your own rewards, being able to really pick and choose ahead of time what rewards you're going to get for certain things, those are potentially trends where essentially what you're doing is really, it's another way of saying hyper-personalization and really just making it all about the person and the experience rather than the company itself.
Finally, Andrew, it's been really awesome. I mean, you've been sharing some invaluable insights with us. Can you tell us what would be your top advice for businesses looking to design or improve their employee recognition and rewards programs?
It's quite simple. I'd be crazy not to say it. You need to get help from experts. So, you know, anything that's this important, you shouldn't be trying to do it by doing a Google search, how to design this program. Get help from experts. It's an interesting challenge. It requires a lot of insight into your people. Get the data on your people. The real magic comes from designing a program that works. And that's exactly what we like to say. We design programs that work. So running the program also takes consistent effort. It's not something that you just leave ticking away in the corner and hope that people are recognizing each other. It's something that takes effort and work. So in short, the advice is get help from the experts.
Mr. Solomon, thank you very much. Do you have a contact number or way that people can reach you so that you could also possibly share some more of your pearls?
Sure. Sure. And there's many people that can help. I don't know if you want me to leave it now or leave a web address or email address or anything.
You can leave a web address or anywhere that they can reach you right now.
So our web address is awards.coza. And quite simple. And you can email me at andrews.solomon@awards.coza. And there are many consultants that could help anyone if they need advice on designing this kind of program.
Thank you very much for your time tonight, Mr. Solomon.
It's my pleasure.
Have a lovely evening further, sir.
Thank you. And you too. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That was Mr. Andrew Solomon sharing with us some invaluable insights into the delicate yet essential balance between intrinsic and extrinsic motivation. If you'd like to contact Mr. Andrew, his information is andrews@awards.co.za or awards.co.za. If you have any questions or you'd like to consult him on anything business related, as businesses continue to evolve, fostering meaningful, sustainable motivation will be key to building high-performing, engaged, and loyal teams. Stay tuned for more insightful discussions right here on Lifestyle Matters. But until next time, we're in each other's company. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.